Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Multiple news outlets are reporting that Patriots owner Robert Kraft has turned down Florida prosecutors' offer to drop charges of soliciting prostitution. Had Kraft accepted, he would have had to make a sworn statement admitting that he would have been found guilty at trial. He also would have had to perform community service, pay a fine, and fulfill an education requirement. Listeners, this is, of course, a sensitive topic that may not be appropriate for all ears, so please use your discretion. A big question remains about what the appropriate consequences should be for people who buy sex. And joining me now is Peter Qualiatine. He's a gender violence consultant and former director of Stopping Sexual Exploitation, a program for men. It's a 10-week program for sex buyers. Peter, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Also here via Skype is Nikki Bell. She's the founder and director of Living in Freedom Together, or LIFT, which supports survivors of commercial sex exploitation and trafficking in Worcester. Nikki, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you as well. What should the consequences be for sex buyers? Do you believe Johns can be reformed by educational programs? Have you yourself bought or sold sex? And are you thinking differently today about those actions? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. And I'll just add that we don't use the full names of callers. And for this conversation, we can also omit the town you're calling from if you need that additional layer of privacy. Nikki, let's start with Robert Kraft and his co-defendants and the news of the last couple of days about this proposed plea agreement that he is reportedly turning down. It doesn't necessarily mean that all of the defendants will. And so, Nikki, I'm curious, what's your take on the deal that prosecutors offered? Does it do justice in your eyes?
I mean, I don't think there's a way to do justice for the harm that it, you know, buying people in prostitution causes. So for me, it's difficult to say like this is justice. I mean, you know, the women that I work with, and including myself, were incarcerated and served, you know, a lot of time for prostitution related activities. And, you know, sometimes it feels like it's a slap on the wrist for the violence that they're perpetrating on people.
And in the case of Kraft, I mean, there's both the legal case. There's also what could happen to him at the league level if the NFL wanted to take any action. And the National Center on Sexual Exploitation has sent a letter to the NFL's commissioner, Roger Goodell, calling for an independent investigation. And I'll just read a portion of that letter. It reads, quote, "If the results of said investigation show Mr. Kraft to have engaged in the purchase of women for sex, the NFL must banish Mr. Kraft from team ownership, because men who purchase others for sex inflict inestimable amounts of human suffering on those they exploit for sex." Nikki, is that what you would like to see? I mean, should Robert Kraft be out of the NFL regardless of what happens to him in court?
You know, I think it's important that we're holding people accountable for the actions that they cause, regardless of, like, you know, whether they have privilege or wealth, right? Because essentially what prostitution is, it's like this differential in power, right? And so, you know, I think it's important that we're holding people accountable and sending a message that this is not something we're going to accept as a society.
Peter, let me come to you. You know, the men in this case, including Robert Kraft, were facing up to a year in jail before Florida prosecutors made this offer to drop charges with conditions. So I wonder, in your view, I mean, is jail the suitable place for Johns to send a message and both to maybe rehabilitate them?
I think the most important message to send is the conversation that we're having right now. And it's a conversation that's related to the Me Too movement. It's a conversation that's related to intimate partner violence and to other forms of gender-based violence and inequality. And that really fundamentally what we need to look at is changing the social norms that are at the root of all of these practices. And so I think the best part of this is that it's a wake-up call. In terms of the individuals, absolutely, there's programs that that can help somebody who's in a situation like Robert Kraft is. But on a broader level, I think that a post-conviction or a diversion program is too little too late. And so really focusing our efforts on prevention, on working with young men specifically, on understanding issues of mutuality and consent in regards to sexual activity is an important focus of our efforts. So yes, the surprising thing with Kraft is that he was arrested at all and that we're having this conversation. I've been doing this work for 30 years, and you know, there's a great deal more buyers out there than there are people who have been exploited by being bought in systems of prostitution. And historically, what's been the focus is those people, right? That the person who's been exploited has been blamed for the harm of commercial sexual exploitation. And so one of the things that I feel pretty good about is that we're starting to see the focus shift. We're starting to see a recognition that this is harmful because it's rooted in inequality, and that, in fact, the accountability for that harm should rest with the buyer.
We're speaking with gender violence consultant Peter Qualiatin and Nikki Bell, founder and director of Living in Freedom Together, or LIFT, which supports survivors of commercial sex exploitation and trafficking in Worcester. And listeners, again, the number, if you'd like to join us, is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Amber is calling from Watertown. Hi there, Amber. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
What's on your mind?
One of my previous life partners, who I hoped was going to be a life partner, I discovered him having sexual relations with prostitutes. And when I brought it to his attention that they were probably underage and probably had been trafficked here and were not here of their own free will, and that he was essentially raping them, he didn't really care for that commentary.
I can imagine. Amber, thank you for the call. Nikki Bell, does Amber's anecdote sound familiar to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have this conversation a lot in our regarding prostitution and trafficking, that like these people are not there of their own free will. And I beg to say that most people aren't there because they're wanting to be or choosing to be, regardless of if there's a third party profiting in this situation, right? I mean, when we're looking at why people are entering prostitution and talking about like the underlying, you know, inequality and vulnerability that they're experiencing, you know, we do, you know, I also, you know, partner with an organization that does a John School. And it's like looking at that, the reality is like, you know, there was studies done by Demand Abolition in different places where it's like, if men show up to, you know, for prostitution activity and they learn that the person is underage, they're still going to go through with it. If they learn that this is a trafficking victim, they're still going to go through with it. Because part of it is about dehumanizing people in the sex trade. So they're not like, the buyer isn't viewing this person sometimes as an actual person, right? So they don't care about the consequences that it's having on the prostituted woman, because they're viewed as a product or an object as opposed to a human being.
Well, so Peter, is it possible then to shift that mentality? You know, Nikki mentioned these so-called John schools, and you ran a men's accountability program for court-ordered and also self-referred sex buyers for more than 20 years. So maybe you could begin by just describing what that education program looks like. Like, what's the curriculum?
So they vary. You know, there are programs that vary from one day to the program that I did in Seattle, which was 10 weeks long, one evening a week for 10 weeks. And the curriculums vary as well. But I think that something people don't understand about sex buyers is that most men who buy sex want to stop buying sex. In a recent study by Demand Abolition last year, they looked at men who an anonymous group of sex buyers, about 2,000 of them across the country, and a full 70% of them said that they strongly agreed or agreed with the statement, "I want to stop buying sex." And so the question then is, why are they doing it in the first place? And most people want to rush to this idea that this is somehow an addiction or a compulsion. But I would say that rather than looking at it that way, look at it as more of a product of what we learn about sex in relationship to what we learn about masculinity. Because when we look at who it is that's buying sex, it's almost exclusively men. And most men don't buy sex. About 80% of men in the United States will never buy sex. But of those who do, of the people who do buy sex, most of them are men. So it has something to do with what we learn about masculinity coming up. Secondly, I think that it's a cultural thing. The culture holds out to men that we can get our relational needs met through non-relational sex, right? That's a mode of proving your manhood to yourself, to your buddies, to the world. And what we know is that it just doesn't work, right? So that they're out there, they buy sex, and they come up feeling shame, guilt, anxiety, but it doesn't stop the behavior. And the culture has not equipped them with the social emotional learning to be able to really figure out what's wrong. So I think being able to dig in deep with them takes more than a day, takes more than a week. I think the premise that most John schools work on is that the men weren't aware of the harm. But what we know is that that's just not true. You know, like Nikki said, most of them are aware of it. They just don't care. They're selfish and they don't think of this other person as a person who could be experiencing harm. They feel entitled to do what they want because they've paid the money and because in their mind, this is normative behavior. So we need to really reframe this issue and figure out what's wrong with the men. I mean, the harm of prostitution becomes a problem for women and other people in prostitution. But it starts with the hearts of men and with the hearts of the sex buyers. And so being able to figure out what are the needs that he's trying to get to meet through this practice, who does he have in terms of the social support in his life? Because it's not really usually about just sex, right? It's about a connection to a much larger picture of who this person is as an individual.
Well Nikki, so, if I can ask, you know, Peter's talking about these men and how they're not thinking about the women that they are buying here. And we've had some ghastly details in this case, you know, police saying that women at the Orchids of Asia Day Spa, for example, this is the place in Jupiter where Robert Kraft was allegedly frequenting, that they were sleeping on the massage beds that they were working on. They were cooking food on hot plates in an alley. In some cases, they were forced to service more than 1,000 men a year. And then there's also the risk of violence. I mean, Nikki, can you fill in some of the details here so that people really appreciate what's going on in this dark, dark world?
Well, I mean, you know, that's just one example of, like, you know, the violence and, you know, things people are experiencing in prostitution. You know, for many people, again, it's all rooted in vulnerability. So those women were obviously homeless, you know, held against their will. Their immigration status was you know, being preyed upon, right? But there are all different kinds of violence people experience in the sex trade, right? Or different vulnerabilities. We see a lot of young people aging out of foster care system. We see, you know, the violence that people experience in prostitution is horrific. And the reality is, most of it, when you talk to the woman, is at the hands of sex buyers. You know, and just the act of being prostituted or you know, being bought and sold is violence, right? So we view prostitution as gender-based violence. Money does not equal consent. So this is unwanted sex, essentially, and somebody handing $40 or $100 afterwards to negate that fact.
We're talking about the consequences for sex buyers, what they should be. And listeners, we'd like you to weigh in. Do you believe Johns can be reformed by educational programs? And have you yourself bought or sold sex? And are you thinking differently today about those actions? The number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Deanne is calling from Back Bay. Hi there, Deanne.
Hi. My point is that the prostitution is like a dark market that we cannot monitor, we cannot control it. It's going to happen for a long time. Has anyone thought about what is the pro of having it legalized? Basically, the sex buyer doesn't have to go to the criminal to buy the sex. And also, people, you have to understand that there are people who actually purposely, they want to be prostitute. And we put them in harm by making it illegal. These women get hurt and, you know, emotionally, physically, but they cannot report because they know they did something illegal. But if we can have the program or even discuss about it, we might be able to help some of these people. I'm sure that the sex buyer do not want to go to the black market and pay the criminal. If we legalize it, then we have a better choice for these people. That's my point.
Tien, thank you so much for the call. So, Nikki, how about that? I'm sure that's an argument that you're familiar with, you know, that there are some women in the commercial sex trade who say they're not victims. You know, they maybe call themselves sex workers and would, like Tien, like to see prostitution legalized. The argument being, you know, you reduce exploitation by bringing it out of the shadows. So how about that argument?
So when you look at places that have legalized prostitution, it's actually shown to have the opposite effect. Trafficking increases, violence against women increases. And you can't, like, you know, the reality is, it, you know, we should be moving towards decriminalizing for the prostituted person. So making it, you know, essentially they could not be arrested for their own exploitation, and then increasing fines and penalties for buyers. We've seen success in reducing prostitution and helping people exit the sex trade in that way. You know, and the reality is, you know, we're saying that people want to be there, and I'm not, you know, disputing that there are, you know, those individuals that are doing this voluntarily, but most people are doing it because they don't have options or they don't have choices. I mean, how many people did you meet in third grade and their childhood dream was to grow up and be a prostituted woman? I mean, I've yet to meet those people.
Right.
Most people are in prostitution because they don't have other options. And so when we're talking about legalizing it to make it safer, that's actually not what happens. And it's not violent because it's legal. It's violent because it's violence.
So, Peter, I mean, is what Nikki is describing there something that resonates with the men you work with? Because I do wonder, once the men are in your program, if they've already bought sex, I mean, is that person beyond the point of return? I mean, once you see another person as an object to be pot, is there really any amount of education that can unlearn that kind of value system?
Yes, there is. And most of the men that I've worked with have been pretty eager to unlearn that value system and to embrace a value system that's closer to who they might feel they could be at the core of their being. I think that given the opportunity, that most of them will kind of rise to the occasion. That said, they're not a homogeneous population, right? And people who want to do harm to women and people generally sometimes target people in prostitution. So you have people who are serial killers that target people in prostitution. You have people who commit sexual assaults, brutal sexual assaults, that will target people in prostitution. They're vulnerable to those types of violence. And so that type of perpetration, you know, you'll be much less likely to have somebody that could make some real big changes for themselves. But the success that we had with our program in Seattle, the longer-term program, was such that we had a significant group of men that came through under court mandate that chose to come back again through the program voluntarily and eventually trained to become facilitators. So I think that change is possible, and that it's not just going to be about, you know, stopping the harm against people in prostitution, but it's also going to be about enhancing these men's lives and making them better fathers and husbands and community members. You know, one of the comments I got back from one of the men that came through the program in Seattle at the end of it, when we asked him what was going to change in his life because of this class, and he said, "I'm going to change the way I raise my son, because I don't want him to be angry and depressed all the time like I am." And to me, that speaks to the ripple effect that happens when you engage in this type of transformative justice project with men who buy sex.
We're talking about sex trafficking and prostitution with gender violence consultant Peter Qualutin and Nikki Bell, the founder and director of Living in Freedom Together. And if you want to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-423-8255. Josh is calling from the North Shore. Hi there, Josh.
Hey there. First of all, thank you so much for having this conversation. I'm literally sitting in my car saying yes, 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 and thank you. So my question is, I'm a little bit baffled by, I think that the work to fix what's going on with sex trafficking is great, but I think that what we're looking at is a much greater problem. I don't think any young boy wakes up one day and decides that he wants to pay for sex. I believe that being a part of a culture that glamorizes sex and glamorizes the objectification of women over time creates, I think, inside of men, this understanding that I can get what I want, I can have sex when I want. I mean, you see it in the porn industry, it's completely blowing up. You see it in the way that men when they're not held accountable, treat women. Mm-hmm. But what I'm sort of baffled at is that that's usually not a part of the conversation. Nobody wants to look at how, and I'm not saying this conversation, but I think the overall conversation, nobody really wants to look at the way that we as a culture embrace sex and embrace the way that, that men look at women and say, you know, maybe we need to fix this and then these other things will be fixed along the way.
Got it, Josh. Thanks so much for the call. Nikki, in the moments that we have left, what about that argument that, that sex trafficking and prostitution is really just one symptom of a much broader cultural issue and our total attitudes about sex from a very young age?
I agree completely. I mean, you know, we often, you know, again, culturally, like and in movies and, you know, society, we view prostitution. He's right. We view prostitution as glamorous and as like women as objects and being over sexualized and all of that. And the reality is it's not glamorous. Right. And I think, you know, Peter's exactly right. It's prevention. We do a lot of prevention work in like in domestic violence, sexual violence and exploitation that is geared towards essentially preventing young women from being victimized rather than preventing young boys from perpetrating. Right. Domestic violence, sexual violence and exploitation. We look at them as women's issues, but they're men's issues that become our issues.
That's Nikki Bell, the founder and director of Living in Freedom Together, or LIFT, a survivor-led agency that supports survivors of the commercial sex exploitation and trafficking in Worcester. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Our thanks also to Peter Qualutine, a gender violence consultant and the former director of Stopping Sexual Exploitation, a program for men. Peter, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Callum Borchers. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.